What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative. Today we're with Texas artist Austin Mead. How are you, man?
Living it up, man. Just enjoying the players around right now and doing a couple things around the house before we kick off another tour.
Hell yeah. You've been relaxing in the meantime?
Not much relaxing. A lot of working.
I feel you. So I saw you back in, I think it was like November, for in Cincy for Dirty Honey. So how'd that go? Like, did you enjoy it? What was your impression on at the end?
Yeah, I think it was a great tour for us to be on. I feel like we made a lot of fans. It was a good fit. It was kind of a bridge between, you know, like the old school type Southern rock and the newer stuff. Obviously, those guys are crushing it and doing a lot of big festivals too. So I think it was an interesting time to see both of us in a lot of club settings, because they've done a ton of stuff with massive artists doing stadiums. And not that we've done a ton of that, but we did quite a few like outdoor amphitheater type tours and theaters and that kind of stuff. So I felt really good about getting back into like some clubs and smaller theaters. It's a lot more intimate, you know, with the crowd. Yeah. And just dirty, loud rock and roll.
Fuck yeah. How'd you feel like was the reception from the Dirty Honey fans? Like, could you really tell like you were hitting a chord with them, or was it like a struggle to get them on board, or what'd you feel about that?
To me, it was easier than some of the past tours we've done. They seem to be open to listening to new music. I think that there's definitely something to be said about when you open for a legacy band like a Godsmack or even a ZZ Top or something. A lot of the times those fans are like, they're paying big bucks and the money to be there to see that band that they love. So I don't know that they're as receptive to new music as someone would be on the club level, yeah. You know? Also, just the hype of that tour and the marketing that was done around it, there was always people at the front door like 2 or 3 hours before, and the line just started to pour over as we got closer and closer. So being able to see that was just like an indication of like, holy crap, people really want to be here and they want to be here early. And we were fortunate enough to be, you know, direct support on that tour. So every time we came out, obviously we come out swinging, and it was always the house that's been sitting there ready to go. Yeah,
man. It's actually kind of funny you said I never thought about the whole legacy band versus like, I guess, current younger band. Cause I remember, like for instance, when you guys toured with Seven Dust a few years ago, that was very interesting to see. Cause I think it was Kira, then you guys, and then Seven Dust. So like, it was pretty cool to see like you guys actively try to win over an audience, and, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That was a lot more of a stretch genre wise too. Mm-hmm. The Seven Dust tour, those guys, is their musicianship is incredible. They're one of the heaviest bands to ever be around. And at the time, that was probably 3 years ago or so now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, our big song was Happier Alone. So you Happier Alone by me and keep up with like Face to Face or something like a big Seven Dust hitter. And so that tour just taught me to really be myself and not try to be something I'm not, because they can sniff it out real quick. And, you know, we gotta play our strong suit and do what we're good at. We've definitely gotten a lot heavier over the years since mm-hmm. then. And tours like that, I think, had a big influence on that, because we were like, well, shit, if we're going to get these opportunities to go do this with these guys, you know, we're going to be ourselves 100%, but still want to be able to keep up in that realm. So I think that might have just pushed the gas pedal down a little bit harder on the acceleration of where we were already going.
Yeah. And another thing you guys do to, cause like your guys' live act is like, it's awesome. And anyone who's seen it will agree. And it's always different. Like the t-shirt cannon? There's the, yeah, like all that. And like the live aspect is like so important. And I think it's make or break for a lot of fans. Like if they're like, they become like a casual fan to like a, I guess you could say hardcore fan, or like, you know, a bigger fan of an artist. And is that, how much thought do you guys put into your live show, apart from the actual like musical standpoint, like where you stand during this part of the song, who shreds, like just trading off solos, all that?
Over the years, especially between me and Willie, because Willie, for everybody tuning in, David Willie's been with me for probably 7-8 years playing guitar, writing songs with me, and so we've never had a quote choreographed practice. We just kind of learn with the years of like where each other is, where we're going to move and where we're going to be. As far as the extra stuff, I mean, I just like to have fun. So yeah, we've done, blow up like Sex Dolls quite a few times. And then I did Beach Balls for a while. Just
the middle finger mask.
That was a fun one. That was a random idea. I got to bring that one back. That was for, one of the Big Danny Wimmer festivals, and I pulled it out during Violation to Light because the bridge of that song. Yeah, Louder Than Life. And that bridge just, it repeats, feels so good to fuck you over like multiple times. So I was like, oh, this is perfect, dude. But things like that. And yeah, I mean, I was like, hell, why not get a t-shirt cannon for these big ass festivals? That's fun. But I don't necessarily think about those things, obviously most importantly is like, is everything good to go? Is my guitar sounding good? Is the vocal clear? Those things. And then the rest of it's just kind of having fun and not taking myself too seriously. Because we are a younger band to a lot of folks. Like, it's the first or second time for a lot of people to see us. And so I kind of just want to break down the barrier of being too serious. Like, we can get as heavy as we want, but also we're here to have a good time and enjoy it. I think especially in those festival instances, you've got to bring some kind of production during the daylight hours. That's pretty much where that whole thing started for me, because obviously as it gets darker at night, like people have pyro and people have crazy light shows, which, we have built a production set that we used for that tour with extra lighting and TVs. And that is actually a really efficient set tool for us, because all of our stuff lives in the back of it, so we just roll 3 or 4 carts on stage and we're ready to go. But that all stemmed from just, we're playing at like 2, 3, 4, 5 in the afternoon, and then after us you've got these massive acts that have, one of the biggest festivals we ever played at the very beginning. We were the first on the main stage opening for Metallica, Welcome to Rockville, a couple years back. And I walked back there and had these pyro cannons with these tanks that were like the size of minivans. I'm like, how much fire are they going to blow up in this crowd? I mean, it was really insane. So you just think about, well, I've got to have fun and bring something interesting. And so when we first started doing that, it was just, how do we efficiently do this where it doesn't take much time, doesn't take much cost, still gets some type of interaction in the crowd? And it always cracked me up, like on that Seven Dust tour I was doing, occasionally we throw out beach balls and kick them out off stage and stuff, and you just see some of these metalheads like, I'm not touching that ball. Yeah. No way, dude. And when it comes to them, they can't resist. They're like, oh, I'm a hater.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. It was that Welcome to Rockville. Was that the year that chick pissed on the dude's face?
Yeah, I think that was the same day we played.
That's the first thing I thought of when I thought of Welcome to Rockville. That's pretty sad. But
yeah, Brass Against. Yeah, that was definitely it. And I missed it. Me and Willie were mad. We were like, oh, the fuck did we miss that? But anyways, good times.
Yep. And so I want to bring up, it's been out for a while now, but I don't think I had a chance to talk to you about your last album, Abstract Art of an Unstable Mind. So the thing with your guys' music, and I think anyone who listens to it can agree, going back the last few albums, you continually progress, most artists do. But with you guys, I feel like it's so different each time and makes it so unique and fresh. Like, Waves and Black Sheep and the newest one, like, they've all sounded different. What'd you think of the fan reception once that one dropped? Like, immediate drop. Like, what'd you think?
For Abstract Art, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I thought when we were creating Abstract Art, because it was so unique, and I thought that the lyrical content and the way that just the journey that you get taken on the album, and the front half is a lot of fun and laid back alt rock stuff, and then it gets pretty heavy and lyrically really deep as you get further into the record. Me and Willie both thought that was going to be like the biggest record of our career. We were like, oh, this is it. We're selling the vans. We're buying new houses. We're touring arenas, you know, whatever. we were very optimistic in the best way possible. And I think that record really was like maybe a little bit ahead of where we were at the moment.
Okay.
That record continues to grow. You get a lot of people that come up and they're like, dude, I dug into the record and I can't believe that this record exists. And that means a lot. But you got to understand, we were recording that album when Black Sheep came out. So like we had a Black Sheep release party in the studio with Kimball while we were recording Abstract Art of an Unstable Mind. So we thought we were just like ahead of the curve and everything. And then turns out, you know, even today, you know, Black Sheep seems to be a larger record for a lot of our fan base. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's to do is a part of Happier Lion and K-Van. I'm still really proud of that record as well. I think that because I was so eager to get so much music out and put so much of it out at the same time, I think we might have put that record out a little bit earlier, a little bit too early. I mean, you know, I also believe that releasing Abstract Art of Unstable Mind at the end of the year was not a great decision on my part. I think we put that out in October. So if you throw an album out at the end of the year, then you have everybody's always gone for Thanksgiving, everybody's always gone for Christmas, and then it takes them 2 or 3 weeks, sometimes even a whole month to get back from New Year's, you know, yeah, to really get shit rolling. So that album didn't have a lot of time to breathe with the same year stamp that it was released in. Like, by the time that album was released, it was already the next year before people really started picking it up and mm-hmm. giving a shit about it. I think with that record too, because there's so much variability from song to song and from front to back, I feel like it could have been two records.
Yeah.
And instead I shoved it into one because I wanted to. And now looking back, I don't know, you can't ever go back, but I always wonder if I did split that up, if it would have gotten a little bit more reaction. But I'm really proud of that record, and I think that that record will always be something that continues to grow as long as I'm touring and making music. That's a record for me that I believe people will look back on when I'm dead and be like, I can't believe this shit exists. Check this out. I hope so, you know?
Yeah. And there's a lot of truth to that, because going like looking at Black Sheep or Waves, even your earliest one, Chief of the Sinners, which has been out for a while now, but like Abstract Art, man, like that, it's so unique and it's so like experimental. Can you call it that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we didn't give a shit. We were just having fun.
Yeah. So would that be like, cause I get confused on the term all the time. Would that be a concept album?
Yeah, I think it is definitely a concept, especially for the first half, because as you listen through, I have little skits in there as if you're listening to the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, that was a way to tie everything together. And, you know, I started my whole musical career, like I worked at a radio station in high school for a couple of years, and I had nothing to do with music there. I was like the board operator for like football games and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then slowly worked my way into music, and I would be the guy that like went and got stuff signed backstage before the Washington County Fair by the artist that was playing there, and then go throw it out to get people to the front of the stage. And that was kind of like my first intro into like meeting people that played music for a living other than like church musicians and things like that. So that was a fun way to kind of tip the hat back to my childhood. But I would consider it a concept because it started with every song that we wrote is about like three or four characters that I created in my head. I sat on these couches with Willie and just laughed our asses off until 4, 5, 6 in the morning at whatever we thought was either the funniest or the saddest story to write about these.
Yeah. So when you do, and I'm going to talk about progression a lot, because like when I like think of your guys' music, it's just always constantly progressing to something new. Is this natural to you guys, or is it more of like you have a thought in your head, like we have to keep moving, or is it just happens like to you? Like, what do you guys think?
You mean in creating records so quickly?
Not quickly, just in general, creating just music like normal pace. Is it? Do you think to yourself like we need to keep changing, or is it just? Because like a lot of artists, I look a lot in the Texas scene, like how it's like, it's more so rock now. You've got guys like Co, Reed, like they have like the blues thing going on. And a lot of artists out there, I feel like, are shifting to that, like just because they are. I'm not saying you guys, because you guys are like on your own island, in my opinion, when it comes to like your own sound. So I guess if it makes any sense, is this like, does this come natural to you? This like progression, this creativity, the new sound you're looking for? Or are you like looking around to what other people are doing, getting influence from that, or maybe a mixture of both, if that makes any sense?
No, I mean, for me, it's always been just a, this is where we feel like we need to be kind of a moment. I've always, sorry, I can hear my little kind of
a little bit. You're fine. But,
No, I've always felt that like what we're making now is what I've always wanted to make. You know, over the last 10 years, I've always wanted to be here. And I feel like the first real taste of that I got, like we had the Waves record come out in 19 or whatever, I think we recorded it in 17 or 18. And I was really big into Tom Petty then. I was like, okay, cool. I made something that sounds in like my version of a Tom Petty. And that was really big for me at the time. And then the Black Sheep record was like our first step in like that more harder rock type of thing. And then I think I've just kept the pedal down on that entire thing for the whole time. But no, I don't really look, especially not at people at our scene, because we don't really tour. Unfortunately, we don't really tour a whole lot with other folks in the scene that I started in anymore. I would love to. And we still play some of those venues, and there's a lot of fun times to still be had there in the future. But more of the bands that I'm looking at are like these heavier guys that we get thrown in front of where I'm like, fuck, I got to keep up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Not only that, but also some really good lyricists that I have just been obsessed with lately. You know, a lot of them are from Nashville, but, that whole, just the lyrics is where it always starts for us. And I think the way that we've morphed the guitars and the other instruments around it is just a natural progression.
Yeah.
But I can't say that I've ever looked to like my neighbor and been like, damn, I want to do that. To me, it always feels like the artists that we're doing that with are further away.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow the universe pulls us closer to them with touring or something, which has just been really interesting. I always thought, like, if, short example for like the Dirty Honey tour, I feel like maybe the style of music, at least like instrumental choice and things, our record Waves probably fits more with their like raw sound.
Yeah.
You know, but that took like our connection with them took from, I mean, that record was 2019. So it took like 5 years for the universe to bring us together. So it makes me really excited about like, okay, what's going to pop out in the next 5 years, you know, from Black Sheep or, you know, from Abstract Art. Like I would love to tour with Cage the Elephant.
Oh yeah. It'd
be like crazy for me. Which maybe that Abstract Art, it was kind of a more raw record too. So maybe that is what kind of lined up the dots with Dirty Honey stuff. But the stuff we're about to be dropping a lot of new stuff, and it's definitely a step, I think like up in like cleanliness of production for us. And it might be a little bit, it's a lot heavier. It might be a little bit more sparkly. There's a lot of guitar shit on there, and I think that it will show people that we can't hold our own in a lot of these metal festivals we've been playing for the last couple of years. We won't feel like such the oddball there, but it's definitely still very much me and unique in that way.
Nice. And we'll hit on your upcoming music in a bit, man. But, and this next question is probably like beating a dead horse for you now, just because you're a metal guy. I'm a metal guy. I don't really Rage Rally's a country website, but they kind of just throw me the rock shit, which I'm fine with. So do you see any like fan pushback at all? Like by now, probably not because you're well established as a rock guy. But like back when you were transitioning from Waves to Black Sheep and still touring around with the guys out in Texas, was there a lot of fan pushback or were they along for the ride pretty well?
No, I don't think we were big enough to really have fan pushback yet. I mean, there was definitely people that still ask me to play songs off of Chief of the Sinners and Waves and Heartbreak Coming. And I will do those things occasionally on acoustic shows, you know. I respect that those people have followed me for so long, and it really is a treat to be able to play some of those old songs that we haven't played in 4 or 5 years. It takes a little bit of work and a little bit of memory for me, but we can usually get them done. I think people have pretty much grown with us for the most part. If they were down at the beginning, a lot of them have still been down. I'm sure we've scared off folks that were going to be scared off well before now. So there was definitely a period when Black Sheep came out when we were still opening a lot of really heavy country shows. Like, I don't mean heavy like as in heavy metal. I mean country-leaning, you know, Western shows. Yeah. And we'd be playing Cave In and say, I wish that you would fuck me like you gave a damn. We'd be playing Dopamine Drop with that heavy-ass riff. And so to those people, Happier Alone was like a heavy rock song. And then you go take that same exact song and you put it in front of Godsmack or Seven Dust or any of these metal festivals we've done, and you're like the lightest pop act on the bill. So
right.
I feel like if anything, we probably got if pushback did exist, it was probably like when we first jumped into the rock scene, because people were like, what is this band doing here? Why are they here? Why are you putting these guys on in front of a heavy metal band whenever they're clearly alternative pop or untrue or something? But even with that crowd now, I think we're starting to grow through that because we've been around knocking on the door for so long that we're just waiting.
Yeah. It's funny. I remember chatting you for a quick couple minutes when you guys were opening for ZZ Top in Indy, I think it was. And you were talking about how like, I think you said you were like almost like struggling with the set list on like what to cut out, what to put in. Cause that's an older crowd, ZZ Top. And like, you might not have known what to do being a younger act, like maybe not that specific tour, but is that like a continuous challenge? Like, what are we going to play tonight to fit this crowd or this band we're opening for, or co-headlining with? Or is that like something that runs through your head a lot, or you just do what you want to do?
No, I definitely pick the scene. Sorry, this guy's throwing a fit back there. Is that baby alive or what? Jesus. Yeah, I definitely think about the set list depending on what tour we are doing for sure. But usually by like the second or third night, I've got a pretty good handle on what we're going to do for the rest of the tour. Shift it around depending on if it's an indoor, outdoor show, you know. Definitely outdoors. I feel like you always have to bring more energy because there's a lot more things going on. I mean, there's planes flying by, there's cars going by, there's all kinds of shit. So you got to really bring the energy, but you give yourself a really nice moment in these theaters and indoor venues to have an intimate time for a minute or two with the crowd. And you can really get the dynamics lower. So we do base our guitar solos, like the level of where our solo starts. If we're in a theater, a lot of times we'll drop the bottom out to where like everything's real baseline, and then we let Willie build it for the next like 2 minutes. If we're outside, especially at a festival and there's a lot of things going on, no, we're gonna hit the solo, but instead of starting the solo here with energy, it's gonna start here. It's gonna be a little bit shorter, but it's gonna just keep going from there. So I think about those things a lot within each song. And then with the ZZ thing, it was more of a family crowd, so I probably don't want to cuss as much. I don't want to say it's harder to sing a Violation to Life whenever you say "Feel So Good to Fuck Me Over" like 20 times in a song. You start to see the difference in the crowd's face, and you don't want to scare them off at first. There's just such a variability of what we do. I think there's something for everybody to enjoy. And if their first impression is like, "Oh, it's not for me. These guys are way too vulgar. They haven't done my job correctly as a frontman picking that set list. But yeah, when we go to a metal festival, like, there are no rules for me. Like,
yeah,
I can do whatever I want, you know. But sounding it back, not back, but like approaching it a little bit differently. For instance, on the ZZ Tour, we usually started with Red Roof Estates, mm-hmm. which is like my disco rock song.
Yeah.
And that immediately got people bobbing their heads. And then I was like, all right, gotcha, bitch. Now come along for the ride. But you got to kind of set the hook and get them into it at first.
Yeah, for sure, man. And it's crazy seeing you guys play like that amphitheater out there. I think like that outdoor, whatever you call it, pavilion, I guess. But so with Blackout, was that like, I know you had Happier Alone come out, and that was a huge moment for you guys. But Blackout came out, and I feel like it got just as big of a pop, and it's even more you sounding. Like, it sounds like you had more like creative hold on it, I guess, if you could say. Like, it just seems like you really like lashed out in it. Is there an oh shit moment, you could call it, like at this point in your career, whether it be Happier Alone or Blackout, when you're like, oh fuck, we're doing this? Or can you really pinpoint that?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as Happier Alone was written, like before we recorded anything, it was just a guitar riff that Willie had come up with, and then I came up with those lyrics. And I remember writing that in our old van on the way home, and I got home and played it for my now wife. I was like, this song is probably gonna be the one. And then sure enough, it like allowed us to tour and to even get 100 people here, 200 people there, 500 people there, you know. That was definitely a moment where I was like, oh shit, we can do this for a living. And then making that transition from the original scene that I, you know, toured for so long into like the national, you know, rock, heavy rock scene, that was definitely Blackout. Seeing people start to play that on the radio for a while. I think that was our first like hard rock single, and it was in the top 20 for a long time.
Yeah,
the rock charts. I think it just came down, but that thing just lived up there for a long time.
Yeah,
which is always what you want it to do. You see a lot of people go up to number one and then disappear, but if you can hang out in like the top 20 or 30 for like 6-8 months like we did, I feel like you have a lot more of a thumbprint, especially for what's coming next. It's like, oh shit, I've seen that guy's name a lot for a long time. So that was a big moment for us, getting any kind of response from that. And we have a new version of that coming out, actually, that we worked on for a bit. We were going to release a new record, and then this opportunity came along to have a new version of Blackout. So that'll be out very soon. I'm really excited about who's featured on that. Other than that, I would say the moments have just been, when you get done with a tour, you're like, shit, we just hit the whole country 3 times, or, you know, we just played 50 shows in a crazy short amount of time all over the country. And then you start to see how many people are responding to your stuff online from different areas, and your merch orders that are online are going to like totally new areas. For me, seeing that firsthand lets me know that we're figuring something out, I guess. If nothing else, staying busy and just kind of spreading the blanket of what would be our gospel, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, touring nationally is definitely a much crazier animal. Like, we're going to Columbus in a couple weeks. Mm. I think the drive there is like 19 hours or something. I'm just like, fuck me.
It's a long one. But y'all got a bus now though, right?
Yeah.
But when it doesn't break down.
Well, yeah. I mean, and it's solid. I've got a bus, I've got a Sprinter, I've got an old van, I've got too many fucking things to take care of. It doesn't really matter. You learn, it's like, man, I could just fly there in like 3 hours, but I'm going to be on a bus for 24 hours. Like,
yeah,
what is going on? So those are some growing pains that we're happily dealing with right now. Like, that's a good thing to be figuring out, is like, oh shit, it's harder to just start a tour in Detroit, mm-hmm. because everybody's got to leave 3 days early, you know? So, and I'm still figuring out most of those logistics, and between that and, you know, dealing with the little guy. So trying to balance the whole life as much as possible.
Yeah, man. Something that's really another cool thing is that you always make sure on stage, and like, even like in interviews too, I've heard like you always credit Willie, and like, so he has to be like a big part of it. When you guys first started writing, you know, way back when, like, how quickly did you guys gel? Like, I feel like that's writing with the same person for so long. Like, I feel like that has to be like an immediate connection.
Yeah, we have. Well, he was a valet. He was parking cars at the Radisson Hotel in Austin, and he was friends with my roommate at the time. I needed a filling guitar player, and he randomly knew my roommate, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I'll do it, but I gotta go get my guitar in storage." And I was like, "Out of storage?
Oh damn!
I thought you were playing like every day regularly. This is gonna suck." But really, just meeting him and seeing his like willingness to do whatever it takes. I mean, dude, touring is not always fun.
It doesn't sound fun.
It's pretty rough. That's why so many people quit way before we have, you know. Trust me, there's plenty of days I've wanted to call it in and, you know, wave the white flag around. But just knowing that he understands the bigger picture of things, like, he understands how the shit works, you know, and he is a very creative person and insane guitar player. You know, he has a lot of freedom with me. His solos are always different. He has kind of a structure that he'll dance around, but they're never the same solo. And like, sometimes I'll challenge him on stage and he thinks I'm going to come out of the solo and I'm going to go into singing. I'm like, nope, hit the next level. So we have fun with each other doing that, like trying to find the next level. And just having thick skin, like somebody throws out an idea, and if you're like, man, I don't think that's the one, you could either be offended or you could get over it. And he's good at just getting over it. So, you know, I don't know how to become good with that too. Taking criticism and giving criticism, like when you're creating something that you do for a living, you know, you gotta just learn how to do it and deal with the punches. But he's down to travel around the country and do all this crazy shit that we do for a living. And, you know, I'm just really fortunate that he's a part of this thing. He definitely had a big, big thumbprint on, Black Sheep, huge thumbprint on Abstract Art. A lot of the new stuff we've been working on, he's been a part of as well. So yeah, he's, definitely, especially the live show, man, there's so much that he's doing there, starting songs and soloing, and then he's got his side pedal board. I mean, he's got a pretty big pedal board out front, but then he's got his side board where he's doing all the crazy whipping noises that we added in on the D-pads. Yeah. That all his started trumpet. On Black Sheep. Yeah, he's a trumpet man too, yeah. That's always a fun one, playing varsity type live, because whenever he pulls out that trumpet and sticks it in the air, everybody's like, oh shit, it's a trumpet. So, a fun moment.
Yeah. As you like have new experiences on the road, in the studio, and like you have a family now, like, do you find your songwriting change, like with like the subjects of what you write about? Like, has it changed at all, like notably?
Yeah, for sure. Especially the last 6 months or so since the kids arrived, which a lot of that'll be on a future record, but definitely reflect a lot on, you know, just how my life's changed and my grandfather passed fairly recently, and so that was a big thing in my life too. A lot of that has kind of formed the new sound and the new lyrical content that we're attacking now. So I'm really excited about it because it's a step away from like the self-loathing shit that I did for so long, you know, like the loser mentality, the chief of the sinners, the black sheep, all that. And so it's kind of taking a bit of a turn now, but it's still very sad music. You'll crank up a tear.
Oh yeah. What about any other cool, I know you write with a lot of people and you work with a lot of people, like you were talking about in Nashville. Are there any, guys that like come to your mind, guys or gals, whoever, that like you thought like, holy shit, I'm actually like working with these people?
Yeah, we've done a couple songs off the new record with a guy named Keith Wallen. And Keith is the like lead player, guitar player for Breaking Benjamin. So that was a very interesting coming of minds. There's even been like some smaller things like online. The front man from Three Doors Down messaged me a while back and was like, dude, Varsity Type is a jam. It's so hooky. And I'm like, damn, didn't know that was going to be a thing. So those have been pretty interesting. Just that, and we've been working with a couple new producers and songwriters that just opened my eyes into like how to build songs differently and when to change stuff, like how to make a chorus not always the same exact melody over and over again, but maybe you change that chorus like halfway through to really give it a different spice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a lot of that for sure.
Yeah. And like, there is a lot of detail you can notice, like if you listen to like your older records compared to your newer ones, like, and I don't know if this makes any sense, but like the delivery, like the cadence of like your vocals, like when you actually like sing the lyrics, like I think that it changes it up. You know what I mean? Like it makes it adds detail to it, I guess.
Yeah. I'm definitely trying to get faster with everything, spit it out faster and give it a little bit more variability. I've sang a lot higher in these last couple songs than I have ever before, so that's been pushing my vocal range. But there's a lot of words in my shit now. I have to take some breaths.
Right. Now, I wanted to ask you about something, and I saw you recently talk about it on, I think it was Instagram, and I got your soapbox. I want you to stand on it here. What's it with the – can you explain the whole thing about the – an artist's content, like being flagged, getting approval to like put it out? Can you kind of like in layman's terms, like explain that and the problem with it?
Yeah. My video froze. Am I frozen on your end?
Yeah, but we're good. Like I still hear you. We're okay. Good. It'll all come out in the wash.
Okay. Yeah. Basically once you're on a label, depending on how your deal is, you know, even if it's a license or if it's a 360 deal where they own everything, you have to get approval to even post a clip of your song. So, for instance, it used to be like 30 seconds of a song or more. They would flag it, which they were trying to protect the artist, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then the last couple of years, it's been like, even if we put up like a 15-second clip of some of my songs in like my own show recaps and things like that, like, hey, here's a show recap of Baltimore, Maryland. This shit was badass. You know, here's what it looked like. And what am I going to put behind him? Put some random music that's not mine? No, I don't have enough music. I don't to put all my music over it.
Yeah.
So just posting that. And then, you know, you get a notification 2 seconds later that's like, oh, this is owned by Universal or whoever people are. You've got to put up you've got to go to a claims copyright challenge or whatever you want to call it. You've got to challenge the copyright infringement. And like same thing for songs where I try to talk about like behind the lyrics all the time. And so we play a little clip of the song and then I'll talk about the lyrics and I'll play a little clip of the song, that kind of thing. And they'll send me a thing saying, you know, like whatever, this YouTube video can't go up or can't be monetized or, you know, got pulled down off of Instagram. And so, because it has to be approved. Well, obviously, on all of these apps, they all run off of the fucking algorithm.
Yeah.
So if your post doesn't immediately get a response, no one's going to see it. So, like, you post something on Instagram or whatever, and people start to like it, and then it gets more and more traction. Mm-hmm. Well, if you post something on Instagram, and it's only live for a minute or two, and only gets, you know, couple hundred likes or whatever, and then it gets put on review, when they do finally release it, Instagram doesn't show it to anybody because it was a slow post. Yeah. You know, so you just spend all this time and sometimes a lot of money like making this content that they want to, you know, they would give anything for you to make more content and be the one that puts out that content. You'd be the golden pony of the content. I'm like, dude, I've put out so many fucking songs and records, like, is that not enough content? to make something happen, you know. And then even if it's not, and I am spending this extra time making this video shit, you know, then why do I have to get everything flagged and taken down? It's just very frustrating because you don't see that on the other end. You're just like, this artist I like, they don't really post that much. Well, for me lately, it's been a lot of bullshit with like just having my own songs flagged and that kind of shit. And I mean, it's crazy. I even had a TikTok video a while back that was like one of our family friends. She has a little girl who loves Happier Alone, and she like made this video. It was on like her little Ring camera or whatever, baby monitor, and like the kid hops down and is like talking to her little Alexa bullshit thing. She's like, turn it up louder, and the machine doesn't do it. So she like runs down from her bunk bed, cranks it up, runs up to the top, and it's like jumping, dancing around on her bunk bed. Really cute video.
Yeah.
And then it gets flagged for like some crazy shit, like child nudity. And I'm like, what is going on here? Yeah, it was nothing to that extent. So then we had like an entire like account review from TikTok, and I'm like, okay, I don't give a shit about this this thing anymore.
Yeah.
Now Universal apparently doesn't even have any of their music on TikTok, you know, which would be great if every label would make that stand. Mm-hmm. That'd be great. But if you're the only one, well, then I feel like the only people that are being punished from that is like your artist and your songwriters.
Right.
You know, if you want, I mean, these labels are signing all these TikTok artists that have never played a show. They just stand in front of a camera and with the lights, and they just do their thing. And, you know, they get a bunch of likes online, and then they don't have any like road experience, you know? And so sure, I would love it if that was me. Fuck yeah. Like take me out of this last 10 years of hell we've been digging through. But you know, it's so weird to see things like that pop off. And then the same exact app that does that, you know, a major label pulls all their music from. And then, you know, I saw today or yesterday, like the government's trying to ban that shit, which for me, I'm like, hell yeah, let's go. You know,
cause
I've been working my ass off grinding, you know, actually driving around the country for a decade. So, you know, I'm sure I could find a shortcut. I could go do some crazy, stupid trending video, but it's like, are you paying attention to what you're doing as an actual artist in music? Like, I don't know, dude. I don't think Tom Petty would have worried about that shit.
No.
So I'm just like, well, I think in the end of the day, I mean, at some point, people realize the short lifespan of those things.
Yes.
I think. And I'm just trying to make music that outlives like all that bullshit. Cause there's going to be another fucking app. There's going to be another star emerge from whatever the famous TV shows or the famous apps or whatever. Somebody's going to get some big money that is ridiculous and crazy. But I don't know that those artists, and this is not everyone, like there are some that are really something truly special, but a lot of those seem like flash in the pan.
Right.
I've already seen some come up and be the biggest thing in the world and then just fucking disappear.
Yeah.
So, I just wish there wasn't a need to have everything approved and everything flagged, especially by the artist that's making it. Like, yeah. I'm submitting these things. So wouldn't the whatever powers are flagging all these videos and these content, wouldn't they know that it was like Austin Mead, the guy that's face is on the video, the guy that made all this music, that all this creation just like kind of fell down to, and I was lucky enough to create. But like, dude, it's my fucking voice singing on these things, and they're telling me that I can't post it. You're like, all right, well, fuck me. I'm going to go stick my thumb up my ass in the corner while you guys find a TikTok star that's not signed yet, and then you can go do fucking whatever with them.
Right. Yeah. So that's just the sad world we're in, man. Like, like you said, there's going to be another app, but I mean, yeah, but like if you make music and you dedicate yourself to making music to outlive that and to, you know, live forever, essentially, like you come out on top anyway, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah, I hope. I don't know. I stopped looking at the numbers and all the bullshit. I think that there's no way to hold a good record down. There's it's really hard to hold a good song down. It's easy to take a shitty song out, but it's hard to hold a good one down. So that's what I believe in. And as much as we tour, dude, we're fucking knocking on people's front doors every week, playing in their fucking neighborhoods and their, you know, their towns. So I know that I found a way to like make it work touring and doing this and selling t-shirts and all that. And I'm going to continue to do that. I can always become more efficient and adapt as we go. But yeah, hopefully people start to realize that it's about the music and not about the fucking selfie stick.
Put that on a fucking t-shirt, dude.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, before we head out of here, well, I guess first, obviously we should probably talk about what you got coming up, music wise, man. What can you tell us about like any upcoming releases or like what kind of style or sound you're going to be going with in the next few releases, next record or what?
Yeah, I put a couple of little teasers out maybe like a year ago on socials, and just really rough writing sessions. And some of that stuff is finally like ready to release. So Stoner Fantasy is one of my favorites that we've recorded off of, that'll be on this new grouping of songs. That's going to come out on 420, of course, because what other day would you want to release Stoner Fantasy?
Hell yeah.
And then, yeah, we have a new feature version of Blackout that's about to drop. That's actually with Danny Warsnop. He's, yeah, you're a metal guy, so you know, but yep. Asking Alexandria and all that. So getting him on that was really a cool moment. And we've added to the end of that song, like the big breakdown that we've always done live. We put that on the new recording of it, so we've changed that song up a bit. And some of those songs that I mentioned writing with Keith Wallen earlier, a handful of those are going to be coming out. So they're definitely more leaning in that direction. So there should be pretty much a flood of new music starting in a week or two. And then, I mean, throughout the summer.
Hell yeah. I can't wait for that. And I'm sure everyone else is hyped for that too. What about, weather's getting warmer, going to be more shows, more stuff like that. Got any cool dates coming up or like a summer tour? Or what about the touring aspect?
Yeah, we are currently, we're about to announce the Stoner Fantasy Tour. And then we have a handful of summer festivals that we're still building, touring around on those. But we're going to be doing a lot in the like Midwest and Northeast areas. I think there's a lot of focus there. We're going to be hitting quite a bit of Florida. So we'll probably be pretty Eastern U.S. heavy this year, as far as I can see. We just did a lot of the West at the end of last year. Yeah, we did a lot of the West Coast at the end of last year. I mean, we were in California so many fucking times and up to Seattle and stuff like towards the end of last year. So we will probably head east and see what happens for the most part with a handful of, you know, regional Texas, Oklahoma headlines. I know that we're doing some festivals that I've always wanted to do and revisiting some of them, such as Rockville.
Yep.
And Upheaval and Rockfest up north. So it'll be nice to play in some of those northern areas that we haven't got to before. We're also doing some like big radio show festivals with Stained and Seether in Florida. So that'll be definitely a cool evening.
Awesome. Yeah, man. Austin, thanks a lot. You got a big year ahead of you, it sounds like. I can't wait to see what comes of it. Appreciate you hopping on, man. Before we go, if you want to give anyone like social media plugs, anything like that that they could check out.
Just Google my name. It's Meade, Austin Meade. Should come.
All right. Hell yeah, man. I appreciate it. And also, everyone check out Rowdy Alternative, Raise Rowdy. We're on all the socials. Got a website. Google our name and it should come up too. So we'll go with that. Austin, again, thanks a lot for hopping on. And for everyone listening, we'll see you next time.
Peace.